What would you tell your younger self about well-being when you think about what you know today versus when you were 20?
When I was 20, I thought well-being meant fitness, that it meant triathlons or marathons or like real active environments. So the slowdown has been what I have found out to be the most beneficial to me, and also the quieting down. I've become very quiet since COVID, so that has really helped me center myself for myself. And it helps me feel more confident in my body because I feel more grounded into who I am in that space. So that is well-being to me, is just finding that space of forgiveness for myself, grace for myself, and that way I can kind of tend to everything else and everyone else I need to.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Purpose Pivot, a Market Scale podcast. And I am so excited today to sit with my longtime friend, Jennifer Walsh, who is joining me in this conversation and also a contributor to the book, The Purpose Pivot. So, Jennifer, thank you so much for being with me and our audience today.
Thank you, Melissa. I'm so thrilled. I'm thrilled.
I know. And as I was like prepping for this, I was thinking back, like we met, I think it was 2009, maybe 2010, yeah. But like in that time period through Jennifer Yen, she introduced us, yes. And we both were on the Upper East Side. And I remember it wasn't Fulton, but it was this little restaurant that had the best warm bread. And I remember us meeting. this is why environments matter.
So funny. I know, exactly. Brings us all together. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like those little things that you remember that resonate with you. But I'm so glad that connection was made. And, you know, at the time, you know, I think you were making a little bit of a pivot for yourself. And over the years, I've been able to really watch you lean into the study that you are invested in of that innate connection between humans and beauty and nature. And obviously you're like a very successful beauty founder who sold her company and, you know, bringing that all together. So why don't we start with that? Like just so the audience gets to know you a little bit more, tell us a little bit about the lab, you know, what your lost art of being human and a little bit of your career background.
Sure. Well, I started when I really realized AI was kind of in this new found technology a few years ago. Back in 2022, I believe I found out about it. I thought, okay, now it's a time to really kind of go deeper into analog life and why beauty and nature and the human experience is so important. And that's why I really wanted to start Lab, which is the lost art of being human. And how do we get back to understanding how important our spaces are, our human connection to one another and the environment? So it was always like there for me, and it always kind of pull on those threads of what I'm feeling in my body. So my work has been all around beauty. So 30 years in the beauty industry, founding Beauty Bar in the 1990s with just an idea and feeling again, like feeling like guttural, almost like I have to do this because I feel it in my bones. And if I don't do it, someone else will. So I started Beauty Bar in the 90s. It was an idea out of a TV segment that I was doing in 1997, where I was showcasing unheard of beauty brands at the time, which was Bobbi Brown, L'Occitane, Stila, you know, so on and so on.
All my favorites then, now.
I know, me too. So it's just kind of funny how that little idea of like, oh, if I can take my TV segment and that's my educational tool and maybe have a sales channel through creating a brick and mortar location, I wonder if I could do that. So I just called all the founders I was already showcasing on TV and they said, all right. So this is before Sephora and before Ulta. Sephora, I think, was just coming to the US, but they just only had their own Sephora branded products when they launched in the US. And it was very different format than what I was doing. So, and that was the beginning of my long career in beauty and spaces and places and how they impact us.
Yeah. And since then, you've really evolved after the acquisition and everything. But there was some learnings you had in that period of life that we actually talk about in my book that I think is relevant in this conversation, too, because I think that was an additive driver for the work you do today. So one thing, 100%. The audience, you know, in that time you talked about, you know, you were always hardcore to the max, you were achieving all these things, but it was like always hardcore to the max and your body had a response to that and it made you pause completely for a minute. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, you know it so well too. It's kind of one of those things where we love what we do. And oftentimes, I mean, I know this is what happened to me. I was so passionate about what I was doing, but I was working 7 days a week for years, but I loved it. But it also, at the time I was married and I had a young stepson, and my work was every day, Saturdays and Sundays. And I worked and worked and worked, and I was growing steadily and opening more and more stores, and the online presence was growing, and it was just continual growth at a very elevated pace. And I didn't have any investors, so it was just like, we can do it, we can do it. And I call it the crab syndrome for entrepreneurs. It was like, oh, that looks like a good thing, and I'll keep, this crab
Yeah,
alive. I'm just going to
it's a
keep bringing things
trap.
in. It's a trap. I got it. I got to keep making and doing. And that really, and on top of that, I was also becoming a more of a hardcore triathlete. I would love triathlons, doing more marathons. So I think the intensity of my schedule of the work and then the working out, it's such a pace and level that was really unsustainable. Again, I thought I was the healthiest I could ever be. I wasn't really eating sugar and I wasn't drinking alcohol, and I thought I was eating all the right things. But again, I was doing everything to the max. And that's when I had this feeling in my stomach and my back one day, and I thought, oh, I'm in a lot of pain. And a few hours later, I was rushed to the hospital. And in the few hours I was in the hospital, I was told that I had colon cancer that had metastasized and spread to most of my organs. I was 35 at the time, 34. And I thought, there's no way. There's no way I'm so healthy. Thankfully, when I did wake up from the emergency surgery, it wasn't cancer. It was just a benign tumor in my colon. It had not metastasized. I just happened to have cysts throughout my body. So I found out a lot about my body very, very quickly in a way that I thought I already knew about, but it was a whole new discovery of I didn't look at the warning signs. I didn't really think about them because I was like, oh, it's fine. I'm just Maybe I just had a little bit of a backache or something, and it wasn't that. It was really this tumor, this benign tumor that was growing within my body for quite some time. So it really made me slow down in a massive way, in a way that I wasn't used to as a founder and someone that loved their job. But again, I had to figure out what that balance would look like and what is balance, and but really to listen to my body in a new way that I never had before.
One of the things I talk about in the book, and thank you for sharing that, is there really ever balance? I've
I
been
know
having a lot of
exactly.
conversations about this, and there's definitely different people quoted in the book on this topic. But I think, especially in the world we live today, it's really integration more than balance. And how do we wrap our heads around that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thankful you said that because I feel like it isn't. We can't balance. It's a matter of like, what are we going to do now to take care of this thing? And then we have different stages of our days. I really truly believe like I have a morning routine that I try and keep to myself that makes me feel, and that's my balance for that. And then I try and get my work done. That's another part of the pie of my day. But I look at it and I have to frame it as a priority for work, a priority for me. Like, what's going to make me the best version of myself and the healthiest version of myself, for my family, my loved ones, my community, to be as healthy as possible for as long as possible.
Yeah, well, you look great for sure.
Thank you.
We're going to talk a little bit about the work, but on a personal level, having gone through that and that moment of, that's a very scary moment. And thank
Oh,
goodness
yeah.
it was benign, but that, that's like stop you in your pant, your tracks, holy shit, time.
Yeah.
What did you change like from that? What did you learn and what new practices did you bring into your life?
Well, I'll do a little side note for a second because I didn't. It wasn't easy for me to change. So I went right back to work. I know, I think I might have told you off camera a while ago that I went right back to work when the doctor and the surgeon said it's going to be a while. You can't go back to work. But here I was in my mind, I have to. But even though I had a full team of people that could take care of everything, in my brain, I wasn't used to not working and to slowing down. So like a week after surgery, I wasn't allowed to drive a car. Because it was a colon, it was like the stomach and the lining. And so I drove myself to work and I told my staff, my team, I wasn't there, pretend I'm not here. And my surgeon knew, she knew that I wasn't going to slow down. So she, and I told my team, I'm going to be in the back office doing some paperwork. If anyone asks for me, I'm not here. And she pretended to be a family member and said, I have flowers. And everyone said, oh, she's in the back. And I got caught. I got caught at work.
And you're lucky she cared enough to do that, you know?
She cared enough. And she really kind of said, Jenna, you know, this isn't good. You have to rest. But I was about to open a new location. And in my mind, I thought, I need to paint the store. I need to do all these things. But the real need was just to slow down. So that really stopped me in my tracks and said, I can't bend down. I can't lift. I can't move my arms. I can't move my body the way I used to. So I really had to slow my entire routine down, make more time for the slowdown. And that was the beginning of an understanding of my body is going to tell you exactly. Our bodies tell us everything that we need.
They tell us.
Yeah. And we just to listen. So that really, that helped me listen to my body in such a profound change in a different way. So it was a meaningful shift in my life.
Yeah. And it's very common, you know, so many of the women that I've spoken to, men and women, to be honest, but you think you could just power through and
yes.
People could tell you listen to your body, but actually practicing that is harder and right. And instead of dismissing it. And I think also in the healing journey, when you are such a, you know, ambitious person that's successful, we often associate the ability to slow down as weakness when it's actually strength.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, Melissa. That's exactly it. Because I think society's always taught us we have to go, 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 go. That perception makes you look successful, or oh wow, look all the things she is doing or he is doing, and that must mean they're important, or I don't say popular, but they're important in their work and they should keep going. And that perception is kind of that joke of worshiping the work over your body, and listening, mm-hmm. like you said, is really the most important thing we can do.
It's the most important thing we could do, telling us so much. So, well, I'm glad you've been able to recalibrate a little bit, right? And take a different approach. And also, I think the other part of this is the point of view of an entrepreneur. That's a common thread. I need to do everything, right? And really, you need to step back and ask yourself two questions. Is it because I can't let go? And is it because I do or do not have the right team? But as a founder, your gift is the vision, right? And bringing that. And then ideally, there's teams that help execute it versus feeling the burden of like, I have to come up with the idea and I have to do everything or it won't happen.
Yeah. Just I always say, like, I mean, you know, too, like, I want to have the best people around. I want the smartest people around me. You know, I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And I want those people to be like the best of the best around me. And I had to, again, that kind of knock on my head of, hey, you're sick, you need to heal, and you have a great team. You assembled a great team, which is, of course, never easy. It's a lot of trial and error. But when you have a very succinct, wonderful, empathetic, kind, hardworking, they love, they're passionate about what they do, what we all do together, that's the difference, that you can step away and they can help step in and do the work for you and with you and alongside of you in a different way. And that realization is really powerful and important. But you're right. When you assemble a great group of people around you, everyone shows up for each other.
And I think the other thing is we put so much focus as founders and entrepreneurs on, I came up with the idea and like, I'm the idea and it has to happen. But we should put more value on success is building that team. Like that is a gift too, to be able to do that, you know? And it's freeing in many ways because we need to be thinking about the next things and like keep on the vision of what's happening. Well, you know, the reason I know about your journey, you know, from a more personal standpoint is because when I shared mine, you know, you messaged me. Mm. And it was, I think, this moment too of that I had of whenever you share and you realize you feel seen and you have that commonality and groundness and everything you shared about what you learned along the way on your recovery was so helpful in my journey for my recovery. Great. And reminding myself and hearing my doctor who did say it's going to be a while.
Yes.
And you need to give yourself that time. You know?
Oh, that's the worst thing an entrepreneur or a very passionate person in business wants to hear. Like, it's going to take time. Like, no, I that's not me. Like, you get it. Like, we talked about that before. It's no, I'll be in no time at all. I'll be better because you're used to being healthy, but your body needs to recover. And that could take a long time.
take a long time, and doing it right up front will help it take less time in the long run is the thing also. So definitely kept myself disciplined on that. But like I said, this has, you know, all been contributing to what you do today, you know, with the Lost Art of Being Human. So talk to us a little bit about that mission, and, you know, how the work that you do helps people realize how they could reset their cognitive function, and also through that become more successful at all that they do.
Yeah, it's been really fun, Melissa, because I'm just so excited about because I keep learning. I think that's the best thing about as we age, the idea of having that open mind to curiosity and being curious about the world around you and listening. And there's a lot of, you have to have patience with yourself and give yourself grace to learn new things, but be curious and kind of like do that deep dive into what's interesting you. And that interest for me was how we're evolving as humans with so much technology around us. And again, like that push to be more and more successful. How do we get back into our own bodies? Because again, like I have my earbuds in right now to speak with you, and we're on technology all the time. And I'm so thankful for that. But at the same time, I saw everyone wanting to biohack their lives away, and everything was given away to technology, right? So what if we learned about our own bodies in the spaces that we go into? And the more I studied and the more I researched about our disconnection from self, tends to be because we're so attached to the technology that we're not really whole. So we're giving away our own agency to be human in a time that we have to be we have to learn more about ourselves to be able to step into a world that's going to be very, very different in the future. So how do we show up for ourselves? How do we learn about ourselves? Whether it be how the spaces really impact us, design, nature, how beauty experiences really help us thrive, whether that be through art, music, and also stepping into, especially for women, like stepping into our confident body as a woman, as a female, whatever you might be doing, there's a sexuality to that. And I don't mean like sex, but I mean like to own the confidence in our own body of who we are as a female being, ancestral wisdom. I call that the AI, the ancestral intelligence, that the more we learn about ourselves from the past, where did we come from? Whether, even if we were adopted, like what were our parents like or our foster parents, and just kind of learn about things that we might be connected to. But that really, to know about ourselves now and the future, we have to learn and unlock the doors from the past to really step into the future. Mm-hmm. And there's so many key elements of learning and really slowing down and listening to ourselves, which is not easy in a very noisy, chaotic world, but it helps us recalibrate and reset ourselves into a very loud and noisy world.
And it's true. I write about it a little bit in the book, but I could say on a consistent basis, I feel it every week. And look, our conversation doesn't mean at all, like we're all going to be who we are. We're still going to be passionate. We're still going to be driven. We're still going to, but it's about going about it in a healthier way for ourselves and from a longevity standpoint. But what you're talking about, I feel almost every week because, you know, my schedule is very intense between being a mom and, you know, my career and the book and all these things. And I could find myself like at the end of the week on a Friday, you're so like, you're going for it because you're so used to that adrenaline of an inbound and I'm going to answer it and an inbound, and I'm going to answer it. And you literally have to force myself. And then I feel that seep out of my body, you know, and by Saturday I'm in a better place, but Friday nights are hard.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that too, because I feel like it's that, they call it the popcorn brain, where we're so, there's this, there's that, there's all these like devices around us. And like you said, I'm like, oh, I better answer that right now, because God forbid I wait a few hours, or I wait till Monday versus Friday, or that need to check all the socials. And there's so many things are coming at you. And I often lose track myself personally, like, where was that message? I know someone messaged me, but I can't remember.
Because you go to check one thing and 20 other messages pop out at you. Exactly. Forget where you are.
But you're so right. I mean, that's exactly, we have to be aware that we're doing it. And that's you yourself saying that you're really realizing your body, like, oh my, I feel that tension that I have to, but you don't have to really all the time. You have to always be connected. You have to respond to everything. it's just something we kind of put into ourselves. So like you stepping away and realizing Saturday, oh, I have my body back. I have my mind back to myself in that space with your daughter, with your husband, with your dog, with, you know, your community. It's you just feel present. And that is something we're losing if we can't find the presence of our time. And I see people walk down the street with their big headsets on and they're looking at their phone and they're bumping into people because they've lost their, you know, spatial awareness, like who they are and where they
literally.
Are. And it's fascinating to me and it's sad. It's scary because anything could come up and just take you. But being slammed into on a daily basis is it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart to see that these people are completely letting go of their own bodies. And it's their choice. Yeah. It's their choice.
It's a practice not to, more so. That's the harder thing these days. So I love that you brought up presence because a lot of the practice that you have and the work that you do with others is helping them find that presence. And, you know, we talk about it in the book, those awe intervention moments and stuff. And so can you, let's talk a little about that. One of the things that you share, I'm sharing a quote, is those who regularly engage in being present with aesthetically pleasing environments exhibit lower levels of anxiety and higher levels of improved cognition. So what are the practices? What do you do? How do you work with somebody to find those ways, you know, to be present, whether it's microdosing, you know, whether it's like in longer time frames from that, like how do you, what's some of the work that you could share?
Well, the one thing I started doing years ago, almost 10 years ago, was leading wellness walks in Central Park. The more I studied around our brain on nature and beautiful places and spaces, all of a sudden I said, oh my gosh, it's right here. You know, how we can benefit from nature is right in front of us. We just never really knew about it. I was never taught in school. I was never told anything. But the more I researched, then I partnered with a few different universities and people to really study and do the research and learn what everyone else is doing globally. So I always try and tell people, so the wellness walks I lead are to try and get people outdoors, whether it be for 20 minutes or an hour, to really, I try and teach and we walk and talk about what's happening to our body when we're exposed to certain smells or like there's a beautiful breeze on your skin. So again, it's just being human. So I always say we are sensorial beings seeking sensorial experiences 24 hours a day. We are like a giant antenna and we can either be fed or, you know, the spaces can feed us or deplete us. So we're places that can really feed our body and feed our soul and our spirit. And that's most of the time in nature. And that's scientifically proven. But again, that cognition of witnessing like awe, like an awe moment, like a rainbow you might see. Or last night, I just happened to be walking home from dinner and the sunset stopped me in my tracks in the middle of the street. Yes, there was a red light so I could stop.
I think you posted that on your stories.
I did. Yes. It was so stunning. It just, and again, like it took me out of my monkey brain of, okay, I have to do this tomorrow. I've got all these things to do. But in that moment of just witnessing awe, the profound beauty of nature, it gives you that space to just be present. And nature does that. So if you give yourself that practice or that time to go outside, if you're doing yoga and you're doing all these great things for yourself, think about the profound benefits of going out in nature, the sounds you're hearing, you're tuning into your spaces of like, oh, what time of year it is? Oh, that bird is chirping. It must be. But it's interesting because the more you learn about the places you inhabit, the more in tune you are with them. So when they're off, you wonder why. And I learned that a lot by living in the tent every summer that I've had in my family for 36 years. So I know exactly almost to the day what week it is of the summer because of the light coming in the windows or the birds that I can hear outside, or I can hear acorns falling. Then I know it's the end of August and summer's coming to a close. So the more you tune into your surroundings, it's like a superpower. It helps, again, also benefits your intuition. You are fully active as a human and it gives you that awareness to tune into people, to read a room better, to really listen with your whole body. Because sometimes we're just listening, we're on our phone and we're just,
Oh, yeah. My daughter knows when I'm doing that. Because that's when she's asking me for things I would say no to. And then I say yes because I'm just like, okay, whatever.
Oh my gosh. I get it. I so get it. Oh boy. Yeah. So it's once we listen with our whole body, it's a totally different experience. And we can hear what people are really saying with their words. And when you listen to how people speak, what they're saying with their body language. It's very telling, and you can be much more of a better leader because you can then understand your team better. You're more resilient to the surroundings and the changing environment. So there's a lot of like all these layers of things that can happen when we do tune into the entire body. And again, it's a practice. It doesn't come overnight. It's something you have to really hone in on, but it's one I say is the best thing I've ever done is to get into this work.
So how do you, people that are like on the go all the time and feel like they hear you say this, right? And they're probably like, well, that's not, you know, I don't live in nature and that's not realistic. And if you're in Manhattan, I'm in a concrete jungle and when am I going to Central Park today? You know? So, right. Just like in reality, that's how it feels. So you also talk about like quieting our soul is necessary work. For those who feel that way, what are some of the tips you have, right? How do they find those moments that allow them to find that quiet and that presence?
And that's hard. You're right. Because especially like I live in New York City. So I'm thinking a few hours ago, the jackhammers were going off. So it irritates me. And it's that sound versus noise. So how do we block out the noise around us, which usually is man-made noise, and in our environment, create a space that is comfortable? If you can put on, even if you have an Alexa device or a YouTube channel and just play nature sounds, I often do that in the winter. I'll play a crackling fire on YouTube. And just so I can have
that
the
always
visual
sounds
and
so
hear
good, right?
It.
And cozy. Yeah,
it really is. So I feel, and again, that's also helped me block out the noise from outside my window. So I always tell people, find ways to create comfort in your environment, even if you can't go outside. That kind of helps me hear different, maybe bird song in my apartment. There's some great studies being done for children from Bill Browning from Terrapin Bright Green. So he's been doing some work with students that have like a fourth grade class side by side. The students that had bird song in the classrooms and very minute, tiny, wouldn't even know it's there, but a little bit of bird sound, bird song. The students did better on test scores, less absenteeism, and they were kinder to the teachers. So birdsong, like simple things that we often overlook impact us because, again, we evolved outside. So we're not thinking, oh, birdsong, it's going to relax me. It's in our DNA. So think about it when we were, you know, millennia ago, when we were cavemen or whatever, what have you. We evolved to know that when there's a threat, usually animals or birds will go away. So the big, you know, saber-toothed tiger might be behind us or something. So
yeah.
I think about this, even my parents' yard, they have all these beautiful like little animals around and creatures, and they have hawks and eagles. The minute the hawk and the eagle do show up, everything else scatters because they're the threat to everything else. So if you can go ahead in your environment and have that really beautiful nature song or nature sounds, look out the window once in a while. Even if you just have 40 seconds to look out the window at nature, if it happened to be a tree outside your window or a skyline, water, 40 seconds is all you need to really relax the prefrontal cortex. That's all it takes.
I mean, that feels very doable. I could do 40 seconds.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
In between Zoom calls, if you only have 40 seconds, just even if you have a painting that you love in your house that's of nature, just look at that for 40 seconds. It sounds kind of silly, but it actually does relax the prefrontal cortex. Look at a beautiful piece of art, put on some music that you like. Again, these are things you can do in your environment that are quite simple. Create layers of textures within your house as well. Not everyone can have a green wall, but if you have some plants, some things like that, but think about airflow. Can you get some natural airflow like with an open window once in a while? I'm happy today because finally the heat wave broke and I just opened my window a little bit to get it's bearable. I can get that breeze coming in just for a little while, just to feel that on my skin. So again, think about how we're activating our senses. What am I smelling? Mm-hmm. What am I hearing? What's that airflow like? So just these variations in our bodies throughout the day. So again, it's very minimal, but you can do it at home for sure.
Yeah, I like it because it feels accessible the way you're describing it. And I think people, you know, there's a lot of conversations like this morning routine you're supposed to have or this. And I think that puts a pressure. Sometimes you can make that happen. Sometimes you don't. And then you beat yourself up about, I didn't prioritize that, but life happens. So I think it's nice to have in your personal toolkit, okay, if there's a morning time frame, like this could be my routine. But if not, I can find these little pockets, these little 1 minute pockets.
That's exact. Thank you for saying that because you're right, because we do tend to beat ourselves up. Oh my gosh, I should have. I always say I can should myself to death, or when people should me to death, I don't want to tell me, like, don't tell me I have to. Like, if I can't, I'm going to try. I'm going to do my best and do things that make you feel good. And again, it might not be every day, or you can't, but you shouldn't beat yourself up for not doing it. But find like those microdosing moments. I always say microdosing nature really is, it's really beneficial, really beneficial.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I have my pup now, and I walk with him every morning. And sometimes he's willing to go with me for half hour, and sometimes he's just willing for 5 minutes. But it's definitely made a difference because I get those moments right with nature and taking him for his walk, and it gives me a nice grounding. Okay, well, you've shared so much, but I want to do a few rapid fire questions for the audience. So you've shared in this episode so much you've learned throughout your life, right? It's journey. What would you tell your younger self about well-being when you think about what you know today versus when you were 20?
Well, when I was 20, I thought well-being meant fitness, that it meant triathlons or marathons or like real active environments. But now I know well-being is really more about going inside, quieting myself down, finding that peace, especially now, and just how life progresses so quickly and how do we kind of slow down. So the slowdown has been what I have found out to be the most beneficial to me, and also the quieting down. I've become very quiet since COVID, so that has really helped me center myself for myself. And it helps me feel more confident in my body because I feel more grounded into who I am in that space. So that is well-being to me, is just finding that space of forgiveness for myself, grace for myself, and that way I can kind of tend to everything else and everyone else I need to.
I love that. I think giving yourself grace is so underestimated and so empowering when you're able to do that. Okay, what are three words of wisdom that reground you when you need
There's a lot, but
it?
I'm just gonna say there's a few words that are just always seek silence. And it sounds silly, but I really try and find, if I can find silence in my day, and I don't mean like pitch silence, but I mean just there's no, I don't have a TV on, I have no music on, I don't have any earbuds in, nothing, but I'm just listening to see what I can find. So seek the silence of, the moment that you're in. I'm always trying to tune into the natural sounds, a breeze, the rustling of the leaves. So silence, yeah. And just again, I use grace, the word grace, a lot because I think we have to give ourselves just the grace to just get through because we think that we're making the right decisions. And we might look back and say, I should have never have done that. But we did the right thing at the right time for what we were going through. And we can look back, and that's hindsight, but give yourself grace for living in that moment and making decisions that maybe later on you're like, oh, I could have done that better. But you did the best that you could do for that moment that you're in. So seeking this, silence and grace, and also grounding yourself. And that could be in nature, but just also grounding in who you are. Stop looking to everything going on around you and to other people, and ground yourself in who you are, where you came from, what you know, what you love, and share that beauty of the gift of you. Because everything else is great, but sharing the gift of you, whatever your talent is or what you're passionate about, that is where the passion exudes so much. I just love watching people. I love watching people in things that they love to do, that they're passionate about. That excites me because I say, wow, I can see their enthusiasm
You
and
can
their,
see, you could feel the happiness and joy.
There's a woman we both might know, but she loves to ice skate in the winter, and she shares it on social media. And I just find such joy in watching her because it makes her feel good. And I love it. I just love watching her talent. And again, it could be art, it could be drawing, it could be photography, whatever it might be. But I think when we share those gifts, it just makes you feel grounded in yourself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love you mentioned like, oh, I could have did it differently or whatever. I think you should also give yourself grace and understanding. You're probably often going to feel that way. But that's just giving you an opportunity to bring that to the next opportunity, right? Like, don't look backward on it. Take it, acknowledge it, and then you'll apply it next time. So, okay. And then the last one, I feel like we touched upon it a little bit by sharing, what you experienced when you were an entrepreneur that first time around. You're still an entrepreneur with a new company. What's one new thing that you bring to your leadership style that you wouldn't have done back then?
Oh, back then it was naivety is bliss. So it's like I'm just gonna do it because why not? But now I think what I bring to the table now, I think, is just awareness, that I don't feel like I have to do everything. I don't have to create this big giant monster of a beast of a business. That you can impact people's lives by doing what you love to do, and it doesn't have to be something big. So I really realize, create what you love, and things will come from that. And don't think about what your exit strategy is going to be. If you're just having something that's a passion for something that you love, create from that space, and something will grow. And whatever that something is, it will feel good in your body because you're doing it out of passion and love, and you want to share it with the world. And I think that's what I'm bringing to the table now. Is in my mind, I always thought, what am I going to build next? Because again, that entrepreneurship brain is, oh, it better be bigger than the last thing. It better be bigger, very bigger. And that's where I've caught myself in another business I created. Was I thought I had to outdo my first business, but now I know that I can create something. It doesn't have to be gigantic, but it could be something big for me to impact other people's lives.
I'm glad you said that, because that's what I was thinking. It's, I think we associate, how do you define big? Because it's not just always in size and scale of your organization. It could be big in impact. And I think you're making a big impact. And you're also doing it by one of the things you said in your second words of wisdom. You're so passionate and happy about it. I think people see that. If you anybody follows you and you talk about the work and you're on stage and all of those things, like, it's so clear that you're living your passion. And I
Thank
think
you. I
that's
appreciate
impactful in
that.
itself.
Yeah, I get
Yes,
excited every, like,
absolutely.
I wake up excited every day because it's a new opportunity to learn, and be curious and about things, and then share that with, like, share that wisdom that you learn through your life or what you're learning now. And then it's just so interesting. So yeah, I thank you. I appreciate it because I get excited every single day.
Well, and that's the thing. That's when you should know. I think, that's when you know you're doing the right thing. Like, if you can wake up without an alarm clock because you're excited, not because you have anxiety, but you're excited, right? And it's like, I'm ready to go today and make this stuff happen. That's an acknowledgement of, like, okay,
It's
you're
not
doing
every
the
day.
thing.
I mean, there could be days you're like, oh my God, this is going to be a tough
Well, it's not
day. I
always going to
don't,
be easy.
yeah, it's not going to be
It's
easy.
not always going to be,
I
but you're
mean,
energized.
yeah, that's exactly it. Because it's not, when I hear people say, oh, you're not, like, so great, I'm like, it's so hard. And
It's
it's
so hard.
hard. Like, we can go into that a whole other time, but it's hard. But when you kind of come with something with passion, you're like, I can face it because you're excited about the day and you're willing to dig in deep and go through the hard stuff and learn about yourself and the people around you and what you want to do. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for everything you've shared. I love what you're doing with the Lost Art of Being Human. If people aren't following you after this episode, I know that they will. You can follow Jennifer on her website or on Instagram, and they can engage with your consulting. So they're getting such a tease of it right now in this conversation. But I love that you shared, what you've learned, because life's a journey. And that you were able to get a lot of good out of what happened, even though those were some scary moments in between, right? That I think a lot of people face. And it's what you make out of it that is the longer term opportunity. So appreciate you sharing.
Thank you. And I appreciate you sharing for everything you're doing because you're such a role model to so many people. And I'm so thankful that you share because, again, like, when you share what your story, it helps other people feel seen in their own journey. So I love everything you do. I've been following you for years and I'm just so appreciative for your friendship and all that you put out in the world because it is truly beautiful.
Thank you so much. I'm glad. I'm like very, I like I said, it was a scary, scary time. But working on this book and you and others being a part of it was the gift I never expected. So thank you so
Oh,
much for
thank
that.
you.
Yes. Well, everybody, again, this is Jennifer Walsh. I know you'll continue to follow her, and thank you for listening to another episode of The Purpose Pivot.